I think it's important, if I'm going to talk about belief at all, to come out from behind anything that looks like a pulpit, because that's what everybody goes to when you talk about belief. This reading is from a book we've been exploring a little bit throughout the year. It's Big Questions, Worthy Dreams by Sharon Delos Parks. She was a professor of mine in divinity school. And the subtitle is Mentoring Young Adults in Their Search for Meaning, Purpose, and Faith. And this is from the piece called Faith and Belief. In contemporary English usage, faith is used primarily as a noun, strongly associated with religion. And it's frequently used synonymously with belief. Faith, belief. This has not always been so. In English, faith was used only as a noun. To believe was chosen as the verb. This was appropriate, for in earlier centuries, the Anglo-Saxon derived word believe meant pretty much what its exact counterpart in German, belieben, still means today, namely to hold dear or to prize. It signified to love, to give allegiance, to be loyal to value highly. The Latin word credo, meaning literally, I set my heart, was translated, I believe, and thus was not a mistranslation. To believe connoted an essential human activity involving the whole person. In recent times, however, the word belief has shifted. Belief has come to suggest primarily a cognitive enterprise. Further, it connotes mere opinion, or even the dubious or false, rather than matters of truth, reality, and ultimate importance. To wit, when the word faith is used synonymously with belief, it takes on those same connotations. These shifts in the meaning of the words faith and belief have critical significance in contemporary culture. Wherever belief has become mere intellectual assent to abstract propositions. Intellectual assent to abstract propositions. And whenever specific religious propositions have become meaningless, impersonal, or at least dubious to a large number of Western postmodern people, then by synonymous usage, faith has come to be equally meaningless, particularly to the critically aware mind. And those of us who like to put forth that we have a critically aware mind feel obligated to come forward and say, faith is useless to me, or belief is useless for me. If we are to recover an adequate understanding of human faith, we must be clear that when, and hear that, human faith, we must be clear that when we use the word faith, we are speaking of something quite other than belief understood in these limited ways. Faith is not simply a set of beliefs that religious people have. It is something that all human beings do. As you know, I've been working with that idea for several months now. You've also let me know, many of you, that it doesn't work for you. To think that way, but I persist. One of the things that modern psychologists have discovered is that abstract propositions aren't how we learn things. We learn things by seeing them and doing them in the particulars of our lives. So if you turn that around, the particulars of your life, what you are doing actually tells us what your faith is, what is the meaning that's organizing, the meaning structure that's organizing your life. Or beliefs, the other professor that I really liked in divinity school was Richard R. Niebuhr, and he wrote a book, Experiential Religion, and he talked about beliefs as those deep values that form our habits. So if you start looking at your habits and then say, what do they tell me about what I believe, you would come up with a different notion than with the abstract proposition. So I tried to present early on the idea of a faith-filled life. the idea that we're all living lives of meaning. Everybody who comes here is putting together their structure of meaning for their life. They have deep guiding understandings. And I thought, what a great idea it would be to go to you and say, let's put together just a one-page paper that kind of describes where you find meaning, how you structure meaning in your life, why you do what you do, what are the particulars that mean something to you. And you could say, I am leading a meaningful life. How many people in here, how many people in here are not leading a meaningful life, would raise their hand? Okay, you can talk to me later, but... I won't go off on there. So, you're doing it, but what, and I said, I'll come to your kitchen table, I'll come to your living room, you can come to my office, we won't take more than an hour, we'll write it out, we'll put it on paper, just, we'll figure this out. Because it's not coming and looking for something here, it's honoring and identifying and living from and more fully from what you hold dear. And I trust all of you. Not that it matters that I trust you. I'm just saying it because I'm the only one who can speak about that. Is that I trust all of you to be living faith-filled lives. Well, what happened? Nobody responded. And everybody who responded said, and we've gone over that before, they said, that word doesn't work for me. You know, that doesn't work for me. And so we tried coming at it from another angle about the particulars. Tried coming at it from the angle of what do I believe? And that was the this I believe. And the reason I came at it from that angle was because it had first been a show on National Public Radio. And all of you are true believers in National Public Radio. See, you nod your heads and you go, yeah. That informs me. And what they said in there was, it actually started by Edward R. Murrow in the 1950s. And he said, what are the guiding philosophies? There you go. Guiding philosophies for your life. What are the things that inform your life? And then they ask you to write an essay in 300 to 500 words that identified the particulars. In other words, not to make it abstract. There you have that abstract. Make it particular. What are your beliefs? And then to give particular examples so it brings it into your life. So we did that, and as I came in the door today, I was talking to somebody about they should come to the This I Believe workshop, and they said, I don't know what I believe, and that's true for most of us, that sense, but I was able to respond, yes, you do, everybody in here knows what you believe, you're living out of it, you're living from it. And if you look into your lives, you'll know what you believe. Now, you can change that, but you'll know what you believe. So what we did was, in the workshop, we said, rather than get in our heads, let's do a free writing exercise where we're going to agree to write this, what I believe, for 5 minutes. And we won't stop writing. All right? We won't. Do that. And that got us out of our head, connected us with what was going on. Remember, we did a service too on one sentence religion. Remember when we did that? Things like Abraham Lincoln said because we had to summarize and think of what I believe in terms of one sentence, either before or after we wrote. Abraham Lincoln says, when I do good, I feel good. When I do bad, I feel bad. That's my religion. Right? The Dalai Lama said the only true religion is being loving and kindness. And he said, but you don't have to be religious to do either. You know? So you can just go for all these sentences. There was one by Kurt Vonnegut. I can't quite pull that back. But one sentence religion. We did it. We wrote it out. We found out this I believe as a concrete example. of meaning. And what I've asked is two people from those workshops to share what they wrote in that workshop or in that 5 minutes for that 5 minute piece. And Robert Laney is going to be the first one to do that. And then Friction Farm, you're going to sing after Robert gets through. So Robert, are you ready to? Oh, it also says don't preach, you know? The guidelines, it just says all those things. Don't preach, use I statements. I'm not setting you up, you just. Thanks, Robert.
I'm a little nervous speaking in front of an audience, and they say if you're nervous speaking in front of an audience, a way to deal with it is to imagine everybody in that audience naked. So you've been forewarned. Despite being 72 years old at the time of this writing, I'm changing the way I feel about life in general. Therefore, many of my feelings may change, but my beliefs will be pretty constant. I believe, first of all, in a supreme being. Some people might say that this is a placebo for me, and that could be true. But placebos have a concrete place in medicine. If you believe strongly enough in them, they have a positive effect. I believe in the right of every person, straight, gay, or transsexual.
Some people raise their hand, they're not hearing, so maybe a little slower. And
all right.
Because it's important to hear you. That's.
I believe in the right of every person, straight, gay, or transsexual, to love the person she or he cares about. There's little enough real love in the world, but I've seen enough gay couples who've loved each other for many years to make me adamant on this point. I'm in favor of people being allowed to marry each other, whatever their gender happens to be. I believe in the personal right to be a vegetarian. I don't quibble with those who are not. It's their business. And if invited to a meal where the only protein is animal, I'll probably eat it without comment. But I can't, in good conscience, buy animal protein. And this after being a carnivore for a lot of years. But the idea of an animal giving up its life for casual human nourishment has become rather abhorrent to me. After years of being a rather reclusive individual, I believe I need some more human interaction, and can I say it, some laughs and cheered sorrows and other deep feelings. I'm making slow headway on this. Sometimes I feel I'm not getting anywhere at all, but I intend to keep on trying. I was brought up in a fundamentalist Christian home with parents who nevertheless disagreed about religious practices. I therefore rejected religion of any kind for many years. But my thinking about a supreme being is still influenced by some occasional Christian ways of speaking. While no longer a Christian myself, certainly not by my parents' definition, I will probably slip occasionally into some Christian terminology. And for this, I ask a little help, a little leeway, but not to the extent of an apology. I believe in everyone's individual ideas about God or supreme being or not. I don't mind theists, agnostics, or atheists. I believe this is something people can and should have a personal belief about. And as long as I'm allowed my own belief, I have no quarrel with others. I believe in physical exercise, my own feelings about myself. I'm no athlete, and I have very little interest in sports, but trying to keep myself in fairly good shape, which is harder and harder as I get older, is important to me. I believe in being financially responsible. My dad didn't believe in credit. My mom always paid our debts, even though we were poor. I grew up with the idea that actually stealing was preferable to not paying a debt. Although I financed some cars and trucks during earlier years, I always paid them off on time. Later, I didn't go for credit anymore, but paid cash. My wife and I paid off our house before she died. I don't have a lot of money these days, but I don't owe anybody anything. I believe in patience. I certainly don't always practice it, but I believe in it very strongly. I believe in helping others. I volunteer weekly for two different organizations. But I have some doubts about certain types of help. There are activities which I will quietly back up. And finally, I believe in the proper baldness of men. Ugly is what you make of it.
You can do it.
Well, I didn't hang on to my "this I believe" that I did at that workshop, so I wrote another one. I believe that giving is an essential part of life, but that receiving is just as important. Receiving well, that is, accepting with awareness and even rejoicing in a kindness extended, in help when it's needed, in everyday and extraordinary moments of beauty or insight. I believe that in receiving well, I give in return to the one who first gave to me, perhaps to life itself. But this is not always easy. Years ago, when awarded a scholarship, I gratefully accepted the money, which I very much needed at the time, and I sincerely thanked the ones responsible. However, I just could not let myself feel good at receiving such an honor. I was hindered by the habit of doubting myself, of believing that I could not possibly be deserving. It diminished the power of the gift and did not serve me or anyone else very well. On another occasion, I turned down a generous invitation from a friend, thinking that I could not possibly return the gift. I could never return the favor. I'd be forever indebted, unable to offer her a gift of equal to the one she offered me. But my friend had no such expectation, and we both missed out because of my reticence. I still wrestle at times with these ways of thinking, but I'm determined now to learn the practice of receiving well. When I find myself with something to offer others, I truly hope they'll be able to accept it and enjoy it fully. It enlivens me when they do. So, a few years ago, when my son was visiting and then insisted before he took off to drive home to Durham that we should go to Papa's and beer for lunch, and when I walked through the door to a dozen smiling faces, friends and family from here and from Charlotte and Columbia and Winston-Salem, I did a pretty good job of just loving the surprise and a pretty good job of delighting in all the attention, which usually makes me pretty uncomfortable. It was such a generous gift, though, and my rather reserved big brother, the one who arranged it all and brought the colorful hat with birthday candles on it and a big 6-0, he all but giggled at seeing me so happy. You see, my younger sister had died unexpectedly just a few months before, and we were both very aware of the gifts we had in each other. So this is what I believe. It's much bigger than birthday parties or scholarships. I believe that if I'm to fulfill my place in this world and to share my best, I first have to pay attention and sometimes stretch in order to open myself and receive the good that surrounds me. May I be filled each day with the realization of what it means to be alive, to be loved, and to love. May I wake always aware of the privilege that I enjoy knowing peace and plenty and the freedom to inquire and grow. And then, may I be changed by these gifts so that as I participate in the life of this world, I bring more kindness and more encouragement to everything I do. I believe the good of the world depends on such changes, that only in receiving well can we then learn to live well and to share wisely and to love generously.
Wow. See, you do know what you believe. I went back to what I wrote, and it turns out it's now 3 years old for this I believe. And I bring it out. I know we're almost over time, but I really want to read it and say it again. Because in going back to it, I realized it said what I believe. I mean, it said one of my guiding principles, and it turns out in looking back at it, I've been living out of that ever since. So it's kind of that experience of, it wasn't just a writing exercise, it really came out, and that's part of the free writing. It just kind of comes through you. You don't fake it. Okay, let me see if I can shorten it. But what I write in the "this I believe" starts with the I, so that means it's not prescriptive for anybody else. It's exploratory. I'm trying to find words and understanding of what works for me. Trying to find and share that sense with you helps me do this work. And that's true for each of us. The I is me, so it will be what I believe. And as I've said, it's not assent to propositions. They're not what I say, but what I actually end up doing is what I believe. So now to the this that I believe. I believe in using my vision of raising children as a guide for life. That's it. The vision of helping to raise children on a path toward being compassionate, life-affirming, life-enjoying, independent, connected, supported people with a strong sense of grounded belonging to life and love is a touchstone belief for me. I also believe that if anybody else has a cell phone on, would you please turn it off? It would be helpful. Okay. Remember that time I said something about the portal of the universe, and as soon as I said the word universe, somebody's cell phone went off with the Darth Vader, the Star Wars thing. That actually happened. I couldn't have planned that. All right, let me get back to this. My touchstone belief. You see, there are a lot of distractions too. I use the word raising for what I'm thinking. I didn't say having children, population control, you know, or even only direct parenting, but placing children in my mental and physical care. Their care is my concern, and not always directly as a caregiver, but as a steward of my time and life and my effect on the world. Thinking of the care of children is my GPS of meaning. It is a good guide for life-supporting being, and that is the point of living, to me, being a life-supporting being. My background and experience in ecology and conservation biology makes it easy for me to expand my sense of focus and understanding to other species and to life in general. It is a trustworthy source of meaning and guidance. At any point when I'm a little lost, I can check into it to get my directions. I'm not sure my child-focused belief would have worked as a guiding belief before I had a child and before she raised me. It certainly wouldn't have worked as well. I hadn't experienced the depth of meaning that comes with the experience, but it does work now. Being a parent at this stage in life, I get it. I better, you say, you have a teenager. And when I wrote it, I actually had two teenagers. My niece Logan was living in our house at the time. All the more lessons. And then I said they are a source of focus for thought, love, meaning, and action. Think how much Jesus missed by not raising children and not living long enough to then grandparent children. He mostly talked about his father. It's a very different perspective from being one. I love that I wrote that. Then I go on about how child raising can be a constant source of focus in everyday practice, watching impatience and frustration, and every time I walk into the kitchen that has just been cleaned up only to see the dishes that have been missed by a distracted teenage brain, I have to first hold in my reaction in order to create mental space in order to try and decide what is the right move as a parent. I've shared that my theology is grounded in a simple, basic understanding of hope and joy. And if I had to put my theology in a picture, it would be a photo of one little green shoot poking up through the ash, the only green in a landscape of gray on the side of Mount St. Helens after the volcano erupted and literally blew off the side of the mountain. That shoot is representative and symbolic of the force of life that is always in the background of the universe, the creative insistence and persistence of life itself. The shoot then turns sun and rain into growth. We humans add protection, nurture, and care to our parental involvement. The shoot also represents my understanding of joy and moments of joy. The awareness of gift and right belonging are always trying to poke through into life, given half a chance. In order to have a child, I had to adjust my sense of hope from an almost entirely future-oriented hope that the future would be different to a hope in that recognized a trust in life and knew about an honored joy found in the present. This understanding helped give me a sense of integrity for bringing a new being into the world and a projected sense of she will be able to live well for her. It also created the need for me to try to balance spirit and soul. I had to try and work to make the future different while also living with joy and beauty in the present. I couldn't raise or care for a child on the path toward being a strong, life-affirming being just by hurrying off to meetings, no matter how important the cause might seem. Compassion, what I wish for my child, I wish for others. It makes so-called complicated justice issues simple to think about and know what is right. Think about the immigration issues. Elementary children should not panic when their parents are a few minutes late because they are afraid they have been taken away. High school leaders should be able to get papers that allow them to get college scholarships and jobs. When I hear of bullying of GLBT children and the suicides that result, it's time to somehow come out of the closet and let them know we're here. But this, I believe, applies to the golden rule, only it would change it to read, do unto others as you would have your child do unto others. That's that particulars of the abstract ideas. They are watching us all the time and learning from our actions. They put particulars to the abstract. As my daughter says about my friend Steve, whose cars run on vegetable oil and who has solar panels on his house, he does what we talk about. Given my understanding of belief, I can imagine a child in my life observing me and writing, "This he believes." It would probably be more spot on than my own. Unitarian Universalists are fond of saying, "I believe in the power of rational thought." I do too. But raising a child requires that I understand that there are limits to rational thought. End of story. There are times when food is needed for low blood sugar or just time to break from the energy of school. There are times when the inability to say what is bothering my child spills over into everything else. So it's better not to lock into the rational discussion about the details that are being presented at that moment. Oh, Lord, I need to tattoo that on my forehead. Following the details as seemingly rational thought is sometimes a path to irrational behavior. So wrap this up. But think community. It takes a village to raise a child or any other important life question viewed through the lens of I believe in caring for children so that they can be on a path to becoming life-affirming, life-giving, life-loving people. Eric Erickson says that children will not fear life whose parents have had the integrity not to fear death. We are all parents of ourselves and ourselves to be. We are the parents in our world. Too big a task? Nope. It's everyday life. The vision of helping to raise children on a path toward being compassionate, life-affirming, life-enjoying, independent, connected, supported people with a strong sense of grounded belonging to life and love is a touchstone belief for me. This I believe. Our offering will now be generously given and gratefully received.